Yay. I had no idea what a cornetto was. So when you made that joke about my Lion's Choice ice cream cone, I was like, I thought it was some weird fucked up East Coast thing because you guys always have weird fucked up foods.
You're
so
right.
I was like,
we do. Drake's cakes.
I know.
We got all the best snack cakes.
I knew you were going to start naming weird shit.
Devil dogs, Malamars. Like, I can just fucking, like, let's go. Crimpets.
I knew you were going to start naming, like, the weirdest shit, and that's, like...
Ding-dongs, like, ring-dings, just fucking winning. We are winning the snack food competition.
So, yeah, no, that was... I went to Lion's Choice, and the girl was very unhappy, and I understand. Anytime a fast food worker yells at me, I'm like, that's fine, you can yell at me. Yeah, and so I was with... My best friends Kat and Fong were in the car with us. Colin was driving. And she handed out a dipped cone. And it was the picture that I posted where it was just, I don't know. I mean, she handed it out in a napkin ball. And I was like, I don't think this has a cone on it. And then I unwrapped the napkin. But also, like, she hadn't mixed up the dip. So it was just like chocolatey oil, kind of a light coating of it, and then the ice cream is like melting as she's handing it to us, and then I unwrap the paper towel, and it's the tiniest little cone, literally the size of my pinky, and we're laughing so hard we're crying. She's got, the girl handing it out, her whole hand is dipped in chocolate, so I guess she just dumped it in there, handed it to us, and we're like laughing crying while Cullen's like trying to act, you know, professional and get the rest of the shitty dipped cones. We immediately went to the dumpster behind the Lion's Choice and threw them away. But it was crazy. So that when you said cornetto, I was like, I don't know what that is. This is something different. This is a St. Louis thing. Okay.
Going back to rewatch these, I was not super excited to watch that one because I'd only seen it once. And I remember not liking it, but I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot more this time, and I think the reason I didn't like it prior was because it's not quite the same sort of joke structure. I don't know how else to describe it, but also it is just like, it's a bummer. Like the first third of that movie is a bummer, and the first two, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, like it sets up what the story is, and then it gets into the genre that it is really fast. Whereas that third one,
yeah,
it takes a while before they reveal what the movie is going to be.
Sit back in your seats, get something to eat, and watch this movie. Don't let the kids see it, because, well, we'll let you hear the movie first. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Left of the Projector. I am your host, Evan, back again with another film discussion from Left. If you like the show, you can subscribe at leftoftheprojector.com and you can rate and do all those internet things. This week on the show, I'm trying to think back to the second album I ever purchased, and no, it was not the Batman soundtrack. I hope you can understand that it's going to be a tough episode as my hand is a bit stiff. But to stop messing around, we're going to be discussing the Cornetto Trilogy, or sometimes referred to as the Three Flavors Cornetto Trilogy, and that is the Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg written films, The Shaun of the Dead from 2004, Hot Fuzz 2007, and The World's End in 2013. And with me on the show, I have Bill and the co-host of Caitlin's Conspiracy Corner, Caitlin and Cullen. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Evan, for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So my icebreaker question, well, first I'm going to ask you all, like, which is your favorite film? And you can't be like, well, it has to be straight answer. And then I'll ask my joking question.
Shaun of the Dead, because I love zombie movies.
Fair. That's fair. Caitlin?
You can't ask me to not go on a tangent. I can't do a straight answer. That's ableist. I have ADHD. Okay. Okay. So I really thought it was going to be Shaun of the Dead because I also love zombie movies. It ended up being Hot Fuzz, which
that's
like
acceptable.
Really
100%.
Is it?
Absolutely.
The cop one?
Yeah.
I was really shocked. I mean, I love, Colin and I have a very cute story with zombie movies where we like, when I asked him like when he fell in love with me or realized he loved me, it was like, his answer was like, remember when we were on the couch, like, you know, just getting to know each other and we started talking about zombie movies. I realized then that I was falling in love with you. And so that's really sweet and really cute. I know everyone's rolling their eyes. So I like,
I'm not rolling
I know
my eyes. I'm straight up touched.
Okay. Okay. we fell in love very fast, very hard and very fast. Rewatching it, I don't love it as much as I thought I did.
I mean, that's
okay.
Rude.
I'm sorry I gave that really.
I mean, that's.
Rude. I know that's rude. I know it's so rude. It didn't really age well for me, and I'm really bummed to say that. I know. I feel like I'm going to get
Evan,
hate mail.
Evan, I'm sorry. We got to cut, and I got to go. I can't be here for this. I can't put up with this.
That's the only slander I'll do, okay?
What about you, Cullen? Are you going the same Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead is the one that is just, there's so many moments in it that are just seared in my brain forever. So I think that's the one that I've seen the most and still will probably put on the most. Even though I think the most recent watch of this for this podcast, World's End, I probably enjoyed the most. This watch through, but Shaun of the Dead's the one that I'm gonna like put on in the background again.
For me, it's also Hot Fuzz, and it's also because so I saw Hot Fuzz in the theater in London when I was there. I remember just being in this
memory.
I was like in a packed theater like on opening night, and I just remember that like that probably adds to it. And I've also, at some point after that, I bought it on DVD and would just play it all the time. My Ruben and I just love that movie and we just like throw it on in the background. And so,
hell yeah.
I respect Shaun of the Dead immensely. And I think it's like a very smart, very clever movie. But just for some reason, the jokes and the like the satire of Hot Fuzz just, you know, all
same.
Cops includes
really...
includes Simon Pegg in that movie. But it's still a great film.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think Hot Fuzz. Like, it doesn't paint police in a positive light.
It's true.
Certainly. Certainly.
I despise police officers. I am related to cops. I do not talk to them. They're the scum of the earth. I would piss on them to put them out if they're on fire. And love Hot Fuzz. And Hot Fuzz does not paint police in a positive light in any way, shape, or form. It paints them as being either incompetent or goons who do shit because they get off on it.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So my second question, which is more of a joke, and just because of the joke I made of like the when they pick up the when they're having the fight with the vinyl records, and he says, you know, what's the second album you ever bought? So I was just gonna say, what was the second album you ever bought? Wrong Answers Only.
Anything funny. The thing is, the second album I bought is so embarrassing that would
same.
Be the joke.
Same. Yeah.
I have no shame. It was probably like Sheryl Crow. And you know what? Still holds up. Still a banger.
I think for me, it might have been like the Spaghetti Incident, Guns N' Roses, that I got from like Columbia Records, one of those like, do you remember Columbia Records, Bill? Like
my parents just gave me and my brother... Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses, like literally as children, because I was raised by crazy people that let us listen and watch things we shouldn't have been watching and listening to.
I grew up on like all kinds of horror movies, and me and my dad would, my mom didn't like horror, my brother got too scared, and me and my dad would watch horror movies in the basement that were like, so fucked up. I mean, every fucked up horror movie you can think of, we were watching, and it was just like, he just acted like it was fine.
My parents just would be like, they didn't like going to the movies, so they would let me go with this other family friend. I saw like,
fuck yeah.
And their parents did not care at all. I saw like Child's Play 3 when I was like 9 years old in the theater.
Yeah.
Jeez. Like, that's just not acceptable.
It explains so much about who we are as people.
Yeah.
I saw Cliffhanger, Days of Thunder, all those like action movies in the late, early 90s, just as like an 11-year-old child.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, same.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no one has to actually say what their favorite, their second album they ever bought was. But I guess the thing that I was going to maybe since we'll start with Shaun of the Dead being like the first movie, and I'm not necessarily going to go through the whole plot. I mean, most people probably know at this point it's about Shaun, and he's this, late 20s guy who works at an electronics store, and he slowly uncovers this plot that's essentially a zombie apocalypse and goes through him and his girlfriend and his friends just trying to survive. And, you can watch to find out what happens in the end. But the thing that I was, when I watched this most recently, from this leftist critical lens, was it's so obvious to me that it was this satire of just the working class people in England as just, we are all zombies. We're forced to work shitty ass jobs. And there's nothing we can do about it. Everyone is kind of a zombie at this point, except for maybe his father-in-law, Philip, who clearly had some money. But everyone else is working class in this movie. And so I think it's pretty cool how it's just it breaks down that, and then it just goes into just a straight zombie movie. It's great.
Do you mean not his dad, Philip?
Yes, not his dad. I'll get to my theories about that I read about later.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so excited.
Which I said I wouldn't share beforehand. But
They explicitly did do that. They looked at Romero's Night of the Living Dead and specifically attempted to recreate that kind of idea that that the zombies were supposed to reflect the idea of the sleeping working class, the oppressed, completely lost, zombified to oppression, exploitation. They explicitly, Edgar Wright explicitly says that, and Simon Pegg contributed to that a great deal. And Simon Pegg studied Marxism in college. His college thesis was on the Marxist interpretation of Star Wars.
No way. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, pretty based.
Yeah.
Oh shit. I didn't know that. Okay. Okay.
Shaun of the Dead is not only my favorite, I actually have a book about the making of Shaun of the Dead.
Whoa. I feel like that's right up your alley.
Oh, yeah.
It's called I Need to Know You've Got Red on You.
Read list.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actually his thesis, it's in his Wikipedia page, but I saw this somewhere else. His undergraduate thesis was called that's A Marxist awesome. Overview of Popular 1970s Cinema and Hegemonic Discourses. So I honestly truly believe that Shaun of the Dead was legitimately meant to be a Marxist film.
100%.
Above all else.
What?
Yep.
This is so crazy to me.
Well, maybe this is as so good time as any for me to tell you the article that I read about this movie. So this is a book, and I can't remember. It's a book about a bunch of different horror movies and zombie movies, essays about each film. And one of them is about Shaun of the Dead. And it's the title of the article is The Queer and the Dead, Transgressive Sexuality in Shaun of the Dead. And basically, to summarize this article, which I'll link in the notes if people want to read it, is essentially that it's in part a sexual inadequacy. The movie is basically Shaun being a sexually inadequate person. There's all these different references throughout the movie. His wife or his mom calls him pickle, a phallic object, while he's holding a knife. There's also, he calls his father, Philip, or mother, sorry, Philip calls him motherfucker, as in the person who wants to fuck your mother. Because I think it's very much implied that he's a Oedipus complex, wanting to literally kill Philip so that he can be with his mother. Now that I know that Peg is a Marxist or was kind of one, it makes sense. Maybe it's a stretch.
I feel like the Oedipal concept is kind of a stretch, personally. It's more the arrested development. His relationship with his mother is really more about arrested development, but also it's a weird, contradicted arrested development, because he also will not maintain a positive relationship with his mother in a lot of ways. So it's it's also the idea of him being permanently emasculated by his relationship with his mother. And it's not an Oedipal thing. It is straight up he cannot grow up.
The other examples, as they say, is that Philip had chased him around with a bit of wood.
Piece of wood.
And then it also talks about how there's the constant joke around the movie of you've got red on you. And when they have the scene later when they're killing the zombie with the tetherball stick, they're literally showing him a fucking motion with the tetherball, showing him because he doesn't know how. So I think you're right, Bill. I think it's like he's very emasculated throughout the movie as like this inadequate person. Like they don't even know how to like hit on a zombie like in his backyard. Like they're like, oh, what's your deal? Like that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
And like because and then like Nick Frost, like his like character, they're like totally like they're just stuck in childhood. They're still playing the same games they were playing when they were children.
Yeah.
And who does that?
Who does that? Not us.
I wouldn't know anything about that as a person.
You haven't talked about that at all in this short time we've known you.
It's like, and like also too, like they always are referring to like, he always wants to go back to the same pub. It's like I think that's the theme of like the three of the movie or like, sorry, the beginning, the Dawn of the Dead, and then like World's End is like the inability to grow up. And this one is like that in the midst of a like zombie apocalypse. And so, I don't know. I mean, I feel like certainly people can say what they're like, some of the best scenes. I mean, there's countless scenes that are great. I just, all like the little references, all the funny lines. I mean, it's a classic. I don't know. Like, I mean, since most of you said you liked Shaun of the Dead the most, like, do you think it's a top tier zombie movie in general, like as far as all zombie movies are concerned? Or is it, maybe Bill, since you're the zombie expert.
Apparently we're all, Caitlin and Colin are also zombie people. You're the only outlier as the non-zombie expert. You know, you go with the sexy vampire undead.
I do. I like vampires.
You like sexy undead. We like rotten undead.
I like both, but I will say, you know.
Listen, I like it all. I'm not.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm partial to werewolves as well, you know.
Yeah. Ooh, a good vampire movie to fall asleep to. Amazing.
I do think that Shaun of the Dead is a top tier zombie movie. Like 100%. I think it is.
Yeah,
it is. I would agree. Definitely, like, if you're like looking at zombie movies and you want to look at them from like a larger perspective, but also as a reflection of the genre as a whole, Shaun of the Dead should be looked at. Shaun of the Dead is not only like important as a zombie movie, it is important as a movie about zombies and about zombie movies. I think that like from the most straightforward perspective, like Shaun of the Dead is the most like Marxist in that like it is working off of like the Night of the Living Dead template, and it is a very like basic reference to that kind of thing. It's very straightforward. It's very upfront with that if you know what you're looking at. Or even if you don't, it's the clearest. But like beyond that, like I honestly, like I love Shaun of the Dead. I absolutely do. But in terms of like a leftist perspective, beyond that, like superficial, it's not like a huge contributing factor beyond that very superficial aspect of it, which is not a fault of the movie. It is what it is. They're doing what was done and they're putting their spin on it and it's its own thing. And that's good. But it doesn't like watching World's End again. I was like, I could read whether they intended it or not. I could read some like real epic level class analysis to this in a huge way. Not to mention the idea of like revolutionary parties and the idea of like how like, the way a Vanguard party should work and how you don't go to other places and just be like, listen, this is how you like anti-Trotsky is kind of like thing. You don't just go someplace and be like, this is how you do it. No, you let the people in that, you know, like you provide information and, you know, or not even provide information. You allow a people to achieve liberation on their own through their means and their processes following the, you know, ideology of like Marxist Leninism and, you know, revolutionary practices, but you don't go into like, this is how it happens. This is how you do it. That's chauvinism. And it's, I don't think they intended that like at all. I don't think they were thinking about that, but I was like, that's a huge thing to be read into that. Or I'm crazy. Who has a Zoji Rushi seat maker?
What I wonder is like, there's all these like gags, you know, like you've ever taken a shortcut before and like, then they just like keep using them each time. I feel like it's one of those jokes where like it's funny the first time and then it becomes like slightly less funny and then it like becomes funny again. So when I watch all three of them again, they were all that scene was just hysterical every time because you'd seen it so much that it just became funny again. Does that make any sense?
Yeah,
it's like all the gags.
It comes back around and it's funny again. I absolutely agree.
Like, I don't know that necessarily Shaun of the Dead was like as political as the Night of the Living Dead series. I mean, I don't think that they were going for that. I think that that's fine. I think it's just a funny ass movie with just like, and also just like their style of comedy too, with like the, I don't know what this cinematography style, where they click between different things, like when the beer is pouring and then they like, you know, I don't know. Do you know, you probably know what I'm talking about, but I don't know what that term is. Does anyone know?
Smash cuts.
Is that what it is? Like smash cuts? Okay.
Quick cuts, smash cuts.
Cut out the part where I didn't know. Yeah, I love that. Especially my favorite. That's why I like Hot Fuzz the most. I think that those kind of cuts are even funnier in that movie.
It is like perfected in Hot Fuzz, I think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe everyone should tell, like, what are your favorite scenes from Shaun of the Dead? Because I don't really know how to like go through this movie. It's kind of like pretty straightforward. I'm not going to like have us go scene by scene. That seems silly. So we can just everyone tell us, like, talk about some of the funniest scenes in it.
The one that pops in my head the most is the Queen pool cube beating.
Yes. It's so good.
That's it.
It's so good.
That's the answer.
I feel it's legendary. Yep.
Yeah.
It's great. And just, you know, the setup with the flickering the lights and all of it is.
Yep.
That's great.
That's the correct answer.
Yeah. That's the one.
I had a feeling that someone was going to say
Literally,
that.
Every time I hear that song, that's what I.
Yeah, that part is there's lots of.
True. Yeah. Shaun of the Dead has the most jokes that I feel like where the zombie infestation isn't the only thing about the world that they live in that isn't normal. Whereas World's End, by the time you get there, it feels like, you know, the alien invasion or whatever is really the only thing that feels, you know, is the only thing you have to suspend your disbelief for. Whereas Shaun of the Dead feels more like a Python sketch or something.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like that, where there's just like these goofy set pieces almost, like, but not in, like, in a bad way. There's always just, like, even just like the opening scene where they're like sitting at the pub and like they're talking and then they randomly are talking about someone else and then they just show them sitting next to them. Like, it's just like classic, just funny, because it makes sense because Simon Pegg was like a stand-up comedian before he was acting. And like, I feel like that makes perfect sense. I feel like so much of the movie is like these funny, like, little gags.
Yeah. It's like simple and almost like childish, but it still works. Like, the "are they still out there?" And he pulls up the blinds open and they're just standing there.
Are they still there? Yeah. And, I mean, it kind of makes sense though, because like his character, Sean, is like a childish, like man child, right? Like, he's works at like a store where like everyone who works there is like 17. It's like their first job. And he's like, I love the scenes at the store. Like, the one scene, I guess.
Which, you know, now that like we're talking about it more, right? And like, and I'm thinking about like these things, like, to continue to go back to like the idea that like the world they live in, like, is so dysfunctional. He has been trained. The best thing that could possibly happen for him is the dissolution of society, because the world he has lived in is so dysfunctional. He has no like actual like adult skills. What he can do is react to terrible things and then like move past them, because he has no emotional intelligence, no emotional depth. It's just like, you know, I can like shoot zombies in the windows while Ed points out directions. Like, the society they have lived in has not set them up to be functional human beings. They can fight zombies in a bar.
And it's kind of a step up from throwing vinyl records at them, which also is like such a great scene. He's like, not that record.
It was the first one I ever bought.
Well, and then he's like, Batman soundtrack, throw it.
I feel like every time you mention the Batman soundtrack, you like set Cullen's little autistic heart ablaze. Oh, yeah. Like, he's so happy.
I have to be honest.
That was
I would not be throwing the Batman soundtrack, okay? I mean, the Bat Dance? That's a classic.
The Bat Dance is a classic.
Well, it was the I assume it was the original one with like that's the original Batman movie,
yes.
Right? Okay. Yeah. It has like it I think that soundtrack actually had like a bunch of singles on it. Like it was like a good album.
Oh yeah.
It had banger
it's
after.
It's a Prince album.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh right.
What was his character's name where he was half Joker, half Batman?
Oh, Two-Face.
It was like Duality or something. He had a whole character.
Well, it was like Bat Dance. You said Party Man was one of the other ones. I can't remember any of the other ones on there. But I was looking at the... Oh, I was trying to find the whole soundtrack. But yeah, it's all...
I got the whole soundtrack.
Oh, you have it? Okay.
Yeah.
Do I have those right? Is it Bat Dance and Party Man?
Yes, Party Man.
I don't know the other ones.
Scandalous. That's with Prince. Well, Bat Dance, yes. Arms of Orion with, again, Prince. And The Future, also Prince. Yeah, it's a bunch of, yeah, it's a lot of Prince. Those are the only like songs that get like any kind of like citation. It's just the Prince ones.
Oh, and it's funny. I went to the Wikipedia page and it says like the length of it. And actually it's like specifically mentioned, there's like a 7-inch album you can buy, like the small album plus the full vinyl. I bet that's actually worth some money if you had the Batman soundtrack. No, I bet it's worth something. I don't know. I'm just talking out of my ass.
You sound like a boomer mom right now. Like, you need to get your Beanie Babies out. They're worth something.
Get the Princess Di Beanie Baby. That's for my wife. That's a drop for my wife when she listens to this. Get the Princess Di Beanie Baby out.
You can apparently buy the Batman soundtrack for $60 right now on vinyl. So not that much.
That's
on Amazon UK.
More than it should be.
But more than I expected, I guess.
But it's a should be $5, but $5 very well spent.
Yes.
If I saw that at a thrift store, I would probably buy it.
You can, I assure you, you can find this at any record store in the used record section for like a dollar. So hot
like just move. Yeah, I was gonna say you felt me there. It's like we could talk about each movie for like you know the whole time, of course, but. Like just because Hot Fuzz for me, I'm just like I already mentioned like my memory of the movie, but I just think that their like gags and their jokes and all of the little like funny quirks like were perfected in this movie so well. Like the scene when he finally arrives to the small town and he like goes in and like he's like the woman behind the call, she's like fascist and he's like a system of government of authoritarian. Hag. I just think the jokes in the movie is just the script. I think is better than Shaun of the Dead. I don't necessarily think that like the well, I like it better, but I think just the script is just so good.
Evan is backpedaling because he doesn't want to get attacked.
Yeah, I think there are some really smart parts to it as well that are like a little before its time, and I might just be reading into like this one specific part, but like the lady cop, how he comes in and he's like trying to be like, I don't know, I would say like a liberal man that's like trying to be respectful of women and be like, women can do, you know, women can be fascist too. But then also like she rebuttals with like being like, I don't know, just one of the guys. Like I work in the trade, so this is very... like something I deal with on occasion with like girls who just want to be one of the guys and have the same like viewpoints as, I don't know, you're just kind of taken off guard because you think like everybody's going to be a feminist in the trades. Every woman like has to be a feminist in the trades, right? Because like you're around these shitty men. So whenever they have like the same views as these shitty men, just seeing that in a movie is really funny that he like came in trying to like save the day and it's like, hey, not everybody... You know, not every like not every person that is oppressed is going to like understand they're oppressed. And I just like that they added that to it. And then like they just kept making her character like act like, I don't know, a disgusting man. And it just made me laugh the whole time whenever she comes out and she has like the fake tits. Well,
you know what's funny?
It's so fucking funny.
Olivia Colman, who you're like the female cop that you're talking about, she actually says like the joke that I never got till this time. She says like, oh, you want a tour? And then she says, I've been around the station a few times. Essentially, she's saying that she's like banged every single cop there.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch that before.
like such a smart thing to, or maybe just subversive, because they usually do try and make that one token character like really aware of their oppression and like really having a rough time. And with her, she's like, no, I'm like playing into it fully, like going hard the other way. And so that just made me laugh so much.
Well, she's like the only female cop.
I feel like that really plays into the idea of like the criticism of like cops. It's like it's the, oh, I hear the next time the bombs will be sent by a woman. It's the same thing. Why? It's exactly what it is.
Yes.
And I thought like the idea of getting Olivia Colman to play that character, I find hilarious, because Olivia Colman is so, she's such a good actor and like dramatic
a
actor.
Professional. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
To see Olivia Colman play that role is, it's wild. Yeah.
It's her second movie. This is her really? Second feature film that she was ever in. And it's probably, yeah.
I was shocked. I forgot that she played that role. And so I think I had only seen Hot Fuzz like one other time, a long time ago. And when I saw her, I was like, damn, that's crazy. But yeah, I don't know why I love that character so much, or like what they did with her. It just makes me laugh that they did that.
She's
yeah.
very funny.
There's just so many good gags. Like you have like the two, you know, cops that have like the same name, and the like, it's just the, it's all like, yeah, this when it's there's like the just there's also so many good, like Martin Freeman, we also like being in all three of these, like also like a top tier actor. Like this movie has a lot of top tier actors. The like the cop who is in the like the very first scene is Bill Nye. He's also like a classic, you know, stage and big actor too. Like it has a lot of people in this movie that are top tier.
Timothy Dalton too. I mean,
oh yeah,
the better of the two Bonds in the that are in this. Oh, series, God.
To be fair, Bill Nighy will be in anything.
That's true.
Like yes, Bill Nighy is a amazing actor. He will also be in anything and has been in like fucking everything under the sun. He has been the elder vampire in Underworld, you know, across from Kate Beckinsale. Is that who it is? Is that Kate? Who the fuck is that? Yeah. Kate Beckinsale in Latex. And then he's been in fucking Love Actually with fucking, he would be in anything.
Fuck it. I mean, he's like, yeah, like every part about the, like, what did I didn't write that many like notes about Hot Fuzz when I was watching it. I just love all of the scenes. And I also just love that the Nick Frost character is like this guy who, you know, like became a cop because of watching like cop movies. Like that's literally why he's a cop, even though his dad's
he became a cop like, because of his father.
Right. But I still think he wants to be a cop like more because of like watching action movies.
He is the Sean of Hot Fuzz. Arrested Development, under his father, has not grown up, has no concept of like the real world, and is just a goofball. Like lives it when Angel goes to his place, he's like, how long have you lived here? And it's all boxes still. Oh, yeah, like 5 years.
but he has the most epic VHS collection like you've ever seen in your life, or DVD collection ever. Like that's a collection that anyone would love to have. I'd love to have that collection. He had every movie in there. I don't know, just there's so many like the, and like what we're talking, Bill, were you and I talking about like one of the funniest scenes is when he what's the joke, like when he has to go interview the guy about his swan,
the piss taker, piss taker, come on. Could you describe
it? Goes there.
Slender, little orange, black. Is there anything else? Well, it's a swan. Favorite bit in the entire movie when he describes the swan to him, he's like, is there anything else you can describe? Well, it's a swan. I die every time. Well, it's a swan.
Also, that the group, like the secret society, the neighborhood watch alliance, is nicknamed the NWA. Like yes. That couldn't have been an accident.
I love that so much. I brought that up 20 times during the movie, and Cullen probably didn't know what I was talking about, but
which is funny because they hate cops, so it's almost like a joke.
Isn't it NWA FTP? Isn't that their full?
Ooh, I don't know.
Or did I? I probably completely.
I just want to point out, Bill Nighy also did a voice of a guinea pig in G-Force.
Damn, he will take anything good for him. There's no shame there.
Does he have some like tax issues, like Nicolas Cage or something?
He's got like a bunch of like, you know, ex-wives and alimony he's got to pay. He's like,
yes,
guinea pig, I'll fucking do it. I'm trying to think of the other like great gags. So, like also the one, I mean, the whole thing about like the secret society and like a town is also like super just funny to me. And, you know, like they do things like for the greater good. And I think that's kind of like another stab at like police thinking like that cops like think that they're doing things for like the greater good of society. And it's, I don't know. I couldn't find anything to say that for sure. But to me, that's how I would read it. Like, they're literally just making fun of cops the whole time.
Yeah, the whole movie feels like they are poking fun at them from, like, every angle. Like, Nick thinking he is, like, an action movie hero. Nick Frost's character, who is just a fucking... Well, I just... All right. Angel thinking he is, like, a hero of a movie to Nick Frost's character, whose name I'm totally blanking on. Who wants to be an action movie hero, and they're both, and he's like, that's not what this is.
It's funny. The Wikipedia article says Nick Frost as police constable Danny Butterman, a young officer who loves buddy cop films. Like, that's just how they, like, that's their description. And it's like, yeah, you got it. What's funny is like those kind of towns, like small towns in the UK, like are actually very much like this. Maybe not with secret societies, but like the actual, like, you know, everyone knows each other. Like they have like the one pub and.
Yarp.
Also the dude who like is really bad at acting too, like there's just so many, like all like the murders are just so funny. Oh, it's just so good. It's so good.
Yeah, the reasonings behind the murders in a lot of the cases are just so critical of like how actually empty these people's lives are, like that they are fixated on these things. They have no greater, and yet they are so obsessed with community. That's their whole thing, but it's all superficial. It's all vapid, and it's all on the surface. It's not
like an HOA.
Actual, yeah, exactly. But it's like, and there's like no actual, like, you know, community or connection. It's all just presentation.
It's all professionalism and not actually like.
Yeah, like they ask them like why they killed the actor dude, and they're just like, well, he just was really bad at theater. We had to kill him. They had an understudy.
We've got professional actors in the wings.
Yeah. That's
my favorite bit in Hot Fuzz is the what do they refer to him as? Like the human statue.
Oh my fucking god! It's so
when they when the they're like in the like catacombs or whatever and like seeing all the like bones and then they see the human statue in the corner.
The guy's just trying to like make a living and he's, yeah, like they talk about like how the riffraff came into town and it's just like this one dude who's a mime, like, sorry. But that's the kind of shit that like an HOA would get really pissed at, right?
Absolutely.
Like, oh, he painted his
absolutely
fence
it's
color.
It dumb shit.
A blight to the streets of Sanford.
Like the movie is like also like the whole like this is like a critique of like almost any action movie you could make the same critique, but like the scene when they finally come back to like take out all of the people in town and like clearly like they're all like terrible at shooting, like they're just like shooting constantly, like
yes,
but
yes.
They can't,
nobody's
hit
hitting.
But didn't they say like how he was a really good, like he's like a really good cop and he can like hit anything, but yet he can't like kill the.
Could you imagine though being like one of the actors of the like older people in the town and you kind of like assuming the type of roles that you're gonna get for the rest of your career, and then you end up being in this movie where you get to shoot guns and get squibbed.
Fuck yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. I also like the reporter getting like the tip of the church, like
that is graphic as hell.
Just squashes his entire face. When I was in the theater and I saw that, that was like the one scene people like kind of gasped. They're like, ugh.
They did a really good job with that. It was, yeah. It's still jarring.
What makes it is that they do like an extra shot of like the body flailing with the thing. Yeah.
It somehow doesn't crush him originally.
It's an impressive piece of like practical makeup, because you can actually like, they actually make it look like it went into his chest and then he like expands out. It's nasty. And like, even comparison to like Shaun of the Dead, other than when what's his face gets torn apart, Shaun of the Dead is pretty mild in terms of gore. And I feel like that scene takes it.
So this is something I saw on the Wikipedia page. I think you said, Cullen, before about how like the, maybe it was Shaun of the Dead being kind of like a Monty Python sketch. Apparently like the, some of the blood and gore they use in Hot Fuzz was to like joke about like the Black Knight into Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Like that was what they were going for, which actually makes perfect sense. Like clearly like all British people probably like Monty Python. Like you're just required by law. So.
They kick you out if you don't.
Yeah, like the queen can cut off your head if you don't.
Queen is or dead.
The king. Yeah.
He can't cut anybody's head off. His fingers are too sausagey.
He's got cancer now. Like, because this is just so? Like.
Oh, no. Oh, I was.
That... Good? Like, what?
Go cancer. Like,
critical support for cancer. Okay.
They're all saying they have cancer, but we all know they're getting BBLs.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. That whole family.
Yeah, that's...
Charles was first.
He got a BBL. They took it all out of his sausage fingers. That's where they took it from.
But he looks good.
He is fuckable.
He's fuckable.
That's the one thing you can't take away from the royal family is
they're all fuckable. Yeah. Obviously, that's how they all end up with those deformities in their face, because they're all fucking each other, so their genes are all jacked the fuck up.
Can't resist each other.
Can't stop. Can't stop, won't stop.
They do look so inbred as hell, because they are. It's crazy that people like worship that weird inbred family.
You ever see that picture?
Yeah.
You ever see that picture from like, I think it's World War One era, where there's like the two cousins, they look like twins. If my wife could hear me right now, she'd be like lecturing me on the, she knows exactly what it is, but it's like the Habsburgs. It's like, yeah, it's like two of them. They look like twins. They are cousins, like multiple removed.
Yikes.
But yeah, I guess we could take on the World's End, which I want to mention too as part of this, because most of the movies have like the same core group of people. The fact that they had Rosamund Pike in this movie is like pretty amazing, because she is a fucking incredible actor.
I know. I was kind of shocked.
And she's fairly young. I feel like it's one of her early... I guess it's actually not as early as I thought. Her first movie actually was Die Another Day, which is a Bond movie, which I did not know. I didn't even know she was in that movie. That movie also is terrible.
Wait, which one is that one? Die Another Day.
Die Another Day. It's the one with Halle Berry.
Yes.
Man. I don't know. I could tell you anything else except that it just isn't good.
The CGI ice.
God, this.
Yeah. This.
They like straight up CGI Halle Berry at one point. It is weird. That movie is bad. Also, I'm going to go on record here. Halle Berry cannot act. She is a bad actor.
And that movie made $500 million. So it tells you how much we know. I guess people just go see Bond movies no matter what.
Yeah, that was also, I feel like, a bad time for movies. Like, it was just, people were loving bad movies.
That was right after 9/11, where movies kind of took a little dive. Oh, they took a hit.
Wait, what'd you say?
I said the movies took a dive or a hit after 9/11. Oh, I get the joke now. I didn't even mean it that way. I guess that's even funnier. But I don't know. Yeah, So for anyone who doesn't, I feel like of the three movies, like people probably have seen The World's End, like maybe like the least popular, even though I think it didn't make the most money, actually. The Hot Fuzz did. But the plot of this movie, like you were both saying at the beginning, like it's very depressing and very slow. Like the first 30 minutes is kind of like, what is going on with this movie? And then like when you finally get to the part where it like gets crazy, you're like, I did not expect this.
Right. Which when I first saw it, because this is only the second time I've seen it, I think I was disappointed in that, just because of, you know, the framework of the first two movies is it sets up who the characters are like really fast. And you know what genre you're getting into right away. Whereas this was like, okay, is this like a like a road trip movie?
Yeah.
Like, what is this? But I appreciated this time of like when they gets in that bathroom fight and that guy's head pops off. It's
shocking. Yeah.
I think part of like the problem I could do the first time watching it, it's that kind of thing where like the setup feels like it takes a while. It feels like kind of draggy because you don't know. And then rewatching it, you know where you're going, and things just move faster when you've seen them already. So it doesn't feel like that.
I will say I didn't know this movie existed. When Evan said a trilogy, I was like, what trilogy? I just knew of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And then Cullen was like, yeah, World's End. And I was like, I don't know what that is. So when we watched it, I had not Wikipedia'd the plot, which I normally do for movies, because I'm a crazy person. But I know that all of you are like seething and don't like that, and that's okay. But
that is a judgment that
people get very mad at me for Wikipedia and the plot. I have too much anxiety. I have to know. I like to know what's going to happen, so then I can like pay attention to little.
This is what my wife does. She like wants to know the spoiler of everything before she watches.
Oh, wait a minute.
I feel like a lot of women do.
Do you mean?
Because Joy also does.
You will Wikipedia every movie before you watch it, or just specifically before coming on here?
No, every movie before I watch it. Like, there's a certain point in watching movies where I'll reach for my phone and Cullen goes, are you Wikipedia in the plot? And it's always a yes.
See, I thought you just meant, like, coming on here, and I was like, no, that's cool. I won't even go on here unless I've seen the movie. Like, I'm not showing up on something I haven't seen. Like...
That would be really funny.
Times. Like, unless I've seen it like 20 times, I'm like, I'm not doing that.
That would be so funny if that's what I meant, that I'm just like not watching movies and coming on here being like, I fucking love it.
That's the fucking bare minimum. That's like the bare minimum, Caitlin. I would expect that.
That would be funny if someone came on and they hadn't seen the movie and they're just like reading the Wikipedia being like, I really like this movie.
I really like it. Yeah, I'm like.
No, that's madness. That's madness. Literally reading a Wikipedia page before, like, or while watching a movie and just having everything spoiled to you. That's madness.
It gets worse. If I see a movie that I want to see in theaters, I'll Wikipedia the plot. I Wikipedia every single plot. If there's a movie that I'm slightly interested in, I'm Wikipedia the plot. I gotta know. I can't wait. I gotta know. When Evan was like, we're gonna wait to talk about our favorite movies or our favorite, you know, one of these trilogies, I was like, that can't happen. I cannot.
I'm 100% with you on that.
Well, I just, yeah, I mean, that's how I feel. I just, yeah, I don't know why I do this. I know it's a problem, but I will say I've met a lot of women who do the same thing. And I think it, like, I don't know what the through line is and why we do
it's
it,
anxiety.
But
yeah, that's what my wife would say too. She gets anxious not knowing. She'll do it for TV shows. Like, if let's say we watch a TV show after it's been off the air. Like, I think we watched the show Lost, like, a few years after, and she, like, was looking it up, like, what would happen at the end. I'm like...
Yep, I'll go episode by episode.
Do you even
want
to watch it now that you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing is, now I know the basics, and so I'm able to pay attention to, like, other little things. So this movie, I tried to not look at the plot before we start watching it, but then it gets to a point where you're like 20 minutes in and I'm like, this isn't a supernatural film or a sci-fi, you know, this is just a buddy thing. I don't like it because it's sad, you know, and I for some reason didn't ask Cullen what happened. I just went straight to Wikipedia and I was like, oh, okay. And so
it's a slow burn. I mean,
yeah, it was. And I think the setup was really good, but it did take a really long time. And I was like, okay, where is this going?
Yeah. I didn't check, but I wonder what the like timing is of like when that bathroom fight happens.
Yeah.
At some point, I think I tried to.
It may just be in comparison to the other two movies. But
it's at least 30 minutes in.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
I'm just going to pull the movie up on my computer and look.
That's literally what I was doing just now.
But yeah, so no, but like just generally though, like I think that this movie, because we're talking about this is like the third of the trilogy. And I think I mentioned before is that they originally wrote this movie with like the same kind of plot, like that was the twist they were going to have. And then they decided to change some of it to be more to fit in with a lot of the like the same themes. And I think that it, like, they did a good job, like, as like the through line of them kind of having this. Okay, so the answer is 36 minutes into it.
Hell yeah, brother.
But yeah, so like, I think it's like a good through line where like you now see almost like Sean's character from Shaun of the Dead, like, is now 10 years older and he's still like kind of the same person. It's not really, it's like an amalgamation of like Sean and his buddy, like Simon, Nick Frost character from Shaun of the Dead is kind of like the character in, what's his name? Gary King. Like, I think that's, it's like, they're just, I think they wrote about it being like, this is like people who can't grow up. They don't want to move on to like the next stage of life. They like are stuck in the past. And I think they do it pretty good. And like each person really like comes to terms with like something that has haunted them. Like the one guy, Shane, like meets his bully from.
That bummed me out. Yeah, that was a huge bummer. He was so like sweet, that the actor that played him was so like sweet and gentle. And like, he did too good.
He is a really like touching character, like a really sweet character.
Yes, he's so sweet. I really,
even in the end, as a blank, yeah, like, just touches my heart.
I don't know. I don't know what to say about this. People could say things about this movie. I mean, I don't know that there's nearly as many like memorable scenes in the same way. I think there's a lot of funny gags, but I think a lot of the like the humor is more like kind of dark. It's like the darker movie.
I had some feelings about
the hospital bracelet and the gauze on his wrists. It's a dark movie. Like an emotionally heavy movie.
Well, okay, so I'm also curious because I feel like I read it. Okay, so when we were watching the movie, and then I wish I could explain this in a good way. Okay, so it kind of gave me libertarian vibes, the speech he was giving at the end of like, we're all unique and you can't tell us anything. And I think maybe I was reading into it a little bit because I want aliens to like take over. Here's the thing. It reminded me, the aliens reminded me a little bit of like Star Trek. Would you agree with that? Of like, they're really
hard disagree.
They're
what? They're definitely, they would be, they're not following the prime directive.
No.
Cullen's also a Trekkie. One year for his birthday, I was like, what do you want for your birthday? And he's like, I'm not a Trekkie, by the way, like at all. But
I can tell.
Well, okay, so it's not that the aliens reminded me of that. It's that.
I know what you mean. You mean like the paternalistic.
I feel like how I viewed it was they were trying to get people on Earth into like a, good place when we're not in a good place. And then I felt like Simon Pegg's speech was like, no, we want to continue being in a bad place without understanding that he's saying that. I felt like it was very like, I don't know, like we're all individualists. You can't tell us what to do or make us do anything. And it, to me, sounded really libertarian. Wait, I want to finish my story about Cullen and the Star Trek thing really quick. So one year for his birthday, he was like, I was like, what do you want? And he was like, I want you to watch my three favorite episodes of Star Trek. And so that was, so he did. We did that.
That's a good birthday.
I just love that that was like his, my present to him.
Cullen, that is so wholesome and beautiful.
It's so,
I love it.
It is really so wholesome. It like describes him really well. Although one of them was the Fuck Island one,
because it's a great episode.
Yeah, it stuck in my memory, yeah, for sure.
I wanted to start with, you know, with something like that because I knew you would respond more to that story, and then I could get you.
He knows he can. Yeah, he can get me in the door that way. Who's the one I'm horny for? No.
No, you're Riker.
Everybody is horny for Riker.
I know. He's a, yeah.
I hate to break it to you, Caitlin. I hate to break it to you. You're not unique in this, okay? I'm sorry.
I know that, but he really does, like, if there's a Riker, if I can, like, focus on Riker, then I can really watch an episode. I feel like I'm inflaming the nerds right now. And they're like, why can't you watch
episodes? We have a Riker Christmas tree ornament because he's so sexy.
Hell yeah. That's incredible. Okay, so the end, whenever he's giving that speech, I want to know why you, even just like ignoring my Star Trek comparison, I want to know why you disagree so hard.
I feel like I need to address the Star Trek argument. That's the only thing I disagree with, because Star Trek is fundamentally like the opposite of that. Like, they're like, listen, as a species, if you have not achieved like the point where like you leave your planet, you've achieved warp, you've gotten that point of like cultural and technological level, we don't touch you. Like, it is the responsibility, the burden of that species to develop in that way, to accomplish their path without outside interference. This is like the complete opposite of that. It's a complete opposite. Yeah. Like, this is like, no, we know better and we're going to like run things for you. Star Trek would see that and be like, the Federation would see that and be like, no. Like, you're actually, we're going to go to war with you. Like, you're bad. You're the villains.
Well, Evan, cut all of my Star Trek analogies out then.
Yeah, well, they're kind of like the Borg.
So this is what they said in the film commentary. Apparently Gary in the movie is like relieved to find out that aliens took over the town, because it means that it isn't like the traditional reasons for one would feel this way of getting old. So like, that's what he said. And then like the whole idea of them like having this conspiracy theory, it was more like a joke that they had to like have that be the idea, would just be like, we want to do this kind of movie. And so they just like snuck it in, and then they just like built the ending based around it. And I think it's kind of nonsensical. And then that they destroy the world is almost just like, I don't know, humans aren't perfect and they destroy the world. And he becomes, he gets to do rove around and be like what he wants to be, like a roving lunatic.
He actually learns from that experience. He does grow up. Like, his whole thing at that point is he is with the blanks and he is opposing their like oppression by humans and their being victimized. Like, he learns. He's with those kids. They're blanks. And he's like, no, I'm taking care of them. He learns to take care of other people.
That's true.
I feel like he's just using them to his advantage. Like, I feel like he's just using them as like a, like, this is my gang.
Because he can lead like, them because I own they're blanks.
These people. Yeah. I feel like it's really, really open. Like, there, because we have like no.
I agree. Yeah.
There's like no real read for it. Like, the movie, that's where the movie ends. You know, it's like.
Yeah. I feel, okay, so how I read it, I was like, I have like no idea of like anyone in this, especially Edgar Wright's political views. So whenever he was giving his speech, I was like, oh no, they're trying to paint him to be the hero with this like libertarian ass speech. But then when all the like, you know, the power went out and everything and the world went dark, I was like, wait, I think when he was giving his speech, they were like, okay, and everybody's listening to this dumbass alcoholic, like very drunk man give a speech, and they're all like, yeah, this sounds good. And then he like fucked them over, and now like the world is like, I don't know, I honestly like a libertarian's dream where they're like, I'm cooking all my own food and growing all my own, doing all my own gardening and homesteading. And it's like, so for a minute I was like, oh no, are these libertarian movies? And then by the end I was like, no, I think that was like a critique on maybe that view.
Yeah, I agree, Caitlin, with your assessment of that. But I also saw the very end with him with the blanks as like a positive of like personal growth, because when he sees the consequence of his rant, of his actions, and he sees like, you know, there's the mushroom cloud and everything, that's the first time in the movie where he accepts like personal responsibility, and he says genuinely, I'm sorry.
Oh,
and at, you know, okay. And at the end too, he's stopped drinking too.
That's true.
It's funny because like in the whole movie, he's like leading his group of like his friends, like he's like the leader. He has to be in charge of everyone. And then, like, he doesn't have to lead the blanks at the end, right? He could just, like, let them die on their own, and he could, you know, I don't know, do something else. But he chooses to be, like, their leader. So, yeah, I could see it being a positive, him being, like, remorseful for his behavior.
It doesn't feel like he's, like, the leader of them. He feels like he's more of a protector, or, like, he's responsible for them. And because in reality, like...
A daddy.
He is the reason they are that way. He has taken like Colin said, like, he took responsibility for his mistakes. And then that is, like, a material reflection of that. He literally took responsible. He took responsible. That's an English language sentence. He took responsibility for those kids that were, like, left and abandoned as the result of his actions.
I get that actually makes the most sense for, like, the personal growth of, like, the whole trilogy, right? He's, like, accepting who he is and not being, like, a man baby, like, you know, acting like a getting clean, realizing, like, you know, the world has ended, but now I'm literally gonna, you know, do good. So yeah, I think that makes it also a much better ending of the trilogy than him being, like, this libertarian douchebag.
I think it ties back to the idea of, like, we start with him in World's End. We start with Gary King in an alcohol or Narcotics Anonymous, basically, right? That's where we start him at.
Yeah, he's telling the story.
And if you know anything, if you talk to people involved in those things, and it's like, it's for recovery, but then there isn't community amongst, like, the group outside of that. Once you leave, you have your sponsor, and then other than that, there's, like, no real community beyond that. And it's like, and that's his whole thing. He's like, I don't want to just sit here and be depressed, and, like, I want to be a person, and I want to, like, enjoy life. And, like, he was never given the tools in a lot of ways to do that. He was never given the means to do that. And this is what the result of it. And then he finally sees there has to be a balance between those things. You have to be responsible and be who you are. There's a balance. It's not one thing or the other. It's a balance, which is what he actually achieves in the face of the apocalypse, which, you know, it is his fault.
Yeah, no, I like the interpretation of it. I really, like, after the movie was done, I was really thinking. I really liked it because of that. I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many, like, ways that I could think of this in my head.
Yeah, it is, like, we said in the beginning, it's like, you watch it the first time, and you're like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, yeah, it's like, compared to the other ones, it's like, okay. And then you revisit, and you're like, there's so much more to this one than the other movies. Despite the fact that none of us picked it as our favorite.
That's true.
I mean, I think it's on its own right. It's a good movie. I just think in comparison to the other two, it would be, you know, it'd just be too hard to put it above them.
Before this rewatch for this podcast, though, I would have, you know, if someone would have asked me, I would have been like, oh, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz are great, but World's End kind of sucks. Whereas now I don't feel that way. You know, I do think World's End is you know, it's a pretty great movie. It just doesn't quite feel like it's connected. Mm-hmm. Like, if Simon Pegg and Nick Frost aren't in that movie, I wouldn't place them or be able to place them within that same trilogy. Whereas Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, if Simon Pegg and Nick Frost aren't in Hot Fuzz, it still feels like it's,
yeah,
within that Shaun of the Dead universe.
Yeah.
Or in the same vein as that.
I think part of that is also just the way the genre is handled, because it's such, like, it's a looser genre. It's a very broad genre as opposed to, like, very specific of, like, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. They are very specific genre pieces. This is very broad sci-fi. It's not even, like, niche sci-fi or, like, very specific sci-fi. This is it's much broader, I feel like.
Yeah, because it's like an apocalyptic movie, but it's not really like other sci-fi movies you would think of.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of any movies that are really like this movie, honestly.
It kind of gave me like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, yeah, completely, vibes, or even like They Live or The Thing, which, you know, of just like the collective.
Body Snatchers is a good one, because that's very much the same thing, right? Like, each person is becoming like this new empty husk or whatever, literally. Speaking of, like, as far as like horror movies, that the original Body Snatchers, not the original, like the remake with from the 70s is one of my favorites. So good. Sutherland. Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, Daddy Sutherland.
Yeah, Daddy Sutherland. The original one from the 50s is also like a pretty incredibly good movie for the time, but the other one is great. The 90s one, not so good. There's like a...
Yeah, I've never seen that.
It's really very weird and like there's a lot of... That's completely aside from this this movie, but I don't know. I guess no one has probably changed their favorite. I have not. But anyone have any like remaining scenes or things? Like, we didn't really talk about like the scenes. I think this is about the best we could go for each of these movies and not go through each individual scene. But any last thoughts on any of them or on Star Trek?
Do you really want to open that? You want to open that?
No.
Please no, and nobody come into my DMs explaining fucking
all right,
Star
Colin,
Trek to me.
So once these two are gone, we'll talk about Star Trek.
Oh, he would love that. He went to a Star Trek podcast a couple months ago. What was that?
Oh God, what is it called? I want to say The Next Conversation, but that's not it. It's another one.
It was like a, it's like a it's a bigger, it's one of the bigger Star Trek podcasts.
Drawing a blank on what the title is, so.
But he went to see the like a live little thing of it, and it seemed really cool.
It was fun. Yeah,
there were so many people dressed up there. It was really cute.
Yeah, they talked about Star Trek V.
I love Star Trek. Star Trek is infinitely superior to Star Wars.
I'll agree with that. As a fan of neither of them, I will say I
as an independent observer.
What? Here's the thing. I don't know why. Watching episodes, I just can't. I can appreciate it. It's like cartoons. I can appreciate it. I can appreciate like when people tell me about it. It sounds really cool. Or like Attack on Titan. When people talk about it, I'm like, that sounds so cool. And then I start to watch it and I'm like, get me out of here.
I really like
when Cullen explains Star Trek to me and like goes on his little tangents when I'm trying to fall asleep and he decides he wants to talk about Star Trek. And then when my friends talk about it, I also have another friend, Aurora, who's super obsessed with it. Oh, she went to the podcast with you. And when they talk about it, I really love the idea of it because it does sound like communism, like everybody like, you know, working together for the betterment of society.
It's luxury gay space communism.
Yeah, yeah. And so I, you know, I like what I've heard about it. But yeah, I just can't, unless Riker's in an episode, I can't do it.
Well, he's in like almost every Next Gen.
Yeah, he's in like almost every. And some of them, he has his trombone, which makes it even sexier.
I just mentioned that. That's, yeah. 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 When he's on screen, I'm happy. And then, yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't know why I keep talking about it because I know like people are.
That's going to be the
like,
cover art for this episode.
Asshole.
It's going to be
Riker with his trombone.
You're like, is this movie about Riker? No, it's about Edgar Wright movie. Sorry. Anywho, I would just say, if you haven't seen The World's End in a while or ever, and you just maybe like forgot it existed, I think you should give it another chance. And it's worth watching them all like in the course of a shortish period to get the like effect of them all.
I still think that like World's End, and I don't think they did this intentionally at all. It is an excellent examination of the national question and national determination and how a people's right to self-determination. Like, I think it is an excellent examination of that. Like, again, I don't think they intended it.
I liked hearing you talk about that.
I think they intended it. I don't think they even necessarily know those terms. Like, I don't think Edgar Wright has ever read Lenin's on the right for self-determination. I don't think he has. But I do think that that movie actually is a great examination of it. And the failures.
That would have been a good thing to bring up while we were talking about it.
Yeah, instead of like an hour ago. Yeah, that would have been.
No, I'm only kidding.
You just cut that out.
I'll just cut that out of the open.
Just do magic in and, you know.
But yeah, like I said, I think it's all, I'm just looking forward to where I was. I don't know if I told you, or only you, Bill, that there's a new Edgar Wright movie with Simon Pegg that's being developed. I don't know how far along it is. Like, there's been random things about it. Not a part of this trilogy, but just a another movie because we all deserve more Edgar Wright Simon Pegg movies.
And yeah. Nick Frost. I love Nick Frost.
I agree. He seems, for some reason, he seems like he would be a nice man in real life. And I don't know why.
Is he not?
No, that seems to be like the impression from like everybody, like, and like they met. Nick Frost was like a waiter at a restaurant that Simon Pegg went to, and they just like became friends. And then like Nick Frost was doing like random stand up, and then he would just like hang around with Simon Pegg. And like they were like, and you know, like close, like very close friends. Like they lived together a long time. Like, and he just came along.
I do love the through line on all three where they keep like hinting a little bit of gayness. Maybe some would see that as friendship, but yeah, there's like, especially in Hot Fuzz, where there's sexual tension.
Yeah.
He says thanks, babe, to him.
Yeah. I mean, even like they seem like they're about to kiss when they're watching movies, or like when he comes back to Nick Frost's place. It's all
He's
really
like, you want to come inside?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the whole thing is like, oh.
Coming up for like coffee?
So they're adorable together.
Yeah. And they're like on the couch. They are very adorable. They're such a good duo.
So this is another hilarious Simon Pegg thing that I saw. It's on the Wikipedia page. But apparently, right after Shaun of the Dead came out or was released, they asked him whether he was going to like leave British film for Hollywood. And he said, it's not like we're going to go away and do, I don't know, Mission Impossible 3. And then he was in Mission Impossible 3 like 8 years
no
later. which only 3 years later. So it's almost like a fortuitous. Now he's been in all of them now, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Nick Frost worked at a Mexican restaurant called Chiquito. And Peg's girlfriend at the time came home and said, oh, there's a guy at work who's really funny and he's wanting to be a stand-up comedian. He asked if he could get some advice. That's how they met.
Oh, that's really sweet.
So they all both sound like they're good people, then.
A Mexican restaurant in England. I wonder what that was
it's
like.
It's where they serve churros.
it's fish and chips inside of a taco shell.
That's what.
Every time they do Mexican, and I'm heavily air quoting that, desserts on the bake-off, and I hear them mangle Spanish words, it makes my skin crawl.
I was just going to bring up the Great British Bake Off whenever they had to do the Mexican food and they're like all confused about like
it's
avocados
so
and stuff. I was like, oh my God.
So as a person who primarily eats Mexican food, it makes me so angry.
It's crazy. I didn't even realize that could exist, that they're like, there's a culture of people like so unaware of such a like universally loved food.
I would assume English people are universally unaware of most things outside of England.
I agree. They do seem to be.
They didn't colonize any good Mexican, Latin American countries.
They went everywhere and then brought nothing back. They just did just nothing worthwhile.
There's good Indian food there, but it's not because of necessarily British people.
Yeah,
because of Indian
food. Yeah, that's a byblow. That's a side effect. That is not.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, man.
Churros.
I don't love them. I don't love them.
I'm going to have tacos tomorrow. I guess it's Tuesday. Tomorrow's Taco Tuesday. But yeah, I don't think I have anything left on these films. But Bill and Caitlin and Cullen from Caitlin's Conspiracy Corner. Did I say that right? Did I mess it up? No, I didn't. I did.
Yeah.
Corner. the Cornetto. Caitlin's Conspiracy Cornetto Trilogy. Thank you both for... talking about these films.
Can I plug the party since I have no actual online presence?
Oh yeah, please plug anything.
Everybody out there, you should organize, get on the streets, free Palestine. And if there's nothing, you know, I'm a member of PSL, the Party for Socialism and Liberation. If that's not in your area, pick another party, get out in the streets, get organized.
And people can listen to your podcast too.
My podcast? Caitlin, I don't know.
No, Caitlin and Cullen's podcast.
Yes, everyone should listen to their podcast too.
The one that we put out biannually. Shannon was really on us. She was like, hey, we have to start recording. We're going to put out an episode at least once a month, okay? And we were all like, okay, we'll do it. And then it's already, we haven't put out our March Madness episode. We did like a cryptid bracket and it's falling apart. Okay, no, we'll get it to you when we get it to you.
We got January and February, and then it all went downhill.
Yeah, we started off really strong. Shannon started in another band. She joined another band, and so she's very busy, and I can't be expected to do any editing. That's crazy. And then Colin, you know, has a very tough, demanding job. Life is hard, okay? Not for me, but that's because I don't choose to edit podcasts and I make it easy on myself. But yeah, I love it.
It's okay. Someone has to show up.
Great. I just show up. Sometimes I show up to everyone's detriment. I show up with Lord, and then we just yell at each other for 3 hours, and then Mike yells at us afterwards and is like, can you guys not fucking do that anymore? But you know what? No, we can't. We both have ADHD, so let us yell.
Well, Bill was on an episode with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that.
Lord is so great. He's such a good pal, and me and him are just two peas in a pod, and then when Joy gets there, it's just out of control.
Yeah, what did we do? Oh, Wayne's World. We had, like, that was just a lot of, you can listen to this podcast anywhere podcasts are available, and we'll catch you next time.